This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Infidels. This is Free Thought Radio, and I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And hello, all you pagan primates. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Later in today's show, we'll be talking with the discoverer of the primate fossil, the discoverer of Lucy, the scientist and atheist Donald C. Johanson.
And we'll also be talking with a free thinker in Las Vegas about why he underwrote the costs of a mini blitz of free thinking billboards in Las Vegas.
This show is for the weekend of October the 24th, 2009. The show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a national organization of atheists and agnostics working to keep state and church separate. And we'll talk about our newest lawsuit later in today's show. And we also work to educate the public about the views of non-believers.
So before we get to that lawsuit and to our interviews, Dan, I want to just quickly ask you about the debate that you did on Monday in Bloomington, Indiana, where you had a rather unusual comment by your pastor opponent.
Well, this is actually the second time it happened, but I debated a local minister, Dan Waugh, in Bloomington, Indiana, to a pretty packed out crowd of a pretty balanced crowd of free thinkers and believers.
This was on campus?
On campus at Indiana University in Bloomington. And the topic was, can we be good without God? And so somewhere into the debate, I turned to him and asked him, since he said that morality comes from God, it's basically obeying God's orders, and that's how we be good. So I said, if God told you to kill me, would you do it?
And what did he say?
Well, the audience kind of gasped and laughed, and then he kind of hesitated, and then he said, well, if I was convinced that the Bible told Dan Waugh to kill Dan Barker, then I would have to consider it. So there you go. Who knows about morality, right?
Well, luckily he didn't think that. And the big state church news of the week for the Freedom From Religion Foundation is that we filed a very nationally significant, historically important challenge of something that is a notorious tax benefit reserved only for, quote, ministers of the gospel, unquote.
And that's not just for Christians, but it's for any clergy. It's commonly known as the parsonage exemption.
So, Dan, you used to be a minister. You used to work as a minister. You used to have an ordination, and that was before you saw the light. You didn't make any money, however. I think you were as poor as the proverbial church mouse, weren't you?
Well, I did get some salary from some churches that I worked at. I got paid a minimal salary, but I was able to deduct from my income the rent that I was paying and not include that as income.
So explain to us how that works.
Ministers who are paid in tax-free dollars can deduct their mortgage interest and their property tax payments along with their rent or their house payment from their income. So their taxes are lower because of that. If a church allows or gives if you are allowed to live on the property in a parsonage, then, of course, you're supposed to normally report that as income, but ministers don't have to. Ministers who are paid a salary, and even if they're not given a specific allotment for rent or house payment, they can exclude that from their income.
Well, under both federal and California law, and we filed this lawsuit in Sacramento, these allowances paid to ministers of the gospel are not treated as taxable income, which is unlike the situation for you and me and every other non-clergy taxpayer.
And homeowner and renter.
And homeowner and renter. And we feel this is an unconstitutional favoritism of religious employees and institutions. And so this is different than being tax exempt as a church, right?
Yeah, we might like to challenge the tax exemption of churches, but we're not going to do that.
Well, it's settled law, so I'm not going to do that. The Supreme Court has spoken.
Yeah, we're not challenging the tax exemption of churches. and other nonprofit groups can apply for tax exemption. So it's not a privilege that only the churches have. We are going after this unfair privilege that clergy have in the tax code. These exemptions permit clergy to deduct from their taxable income housing allowances furnished as part of compensation.
And the legislative history makes clear the religious purpose, which would be unconstitutional, behind these unique privileges. We go back again to the 1950s, in 1954, when Congress amended the tax code to permit all clergy to exempt their housing costs from their income taxes. And it was a sponsor, Representative Peter Mack, who said into the record, this was his rationale, quote, "Certainly in these times when we are being threatened by a godless and anti-religious world movement, we should correct this discrimination against certain ministers of the gospel who are carrying on such a courageous fight against this foe." That would be you and me, I guess. "Certainly this is not too much to do for these people who are caring for our spiritual welfare." And then that's the end of that quote. So we have a smoking gun here.
Section 107.2 of the IRS code allows ministers to avoid paying taxes on income declared to be a housing allowance. It also permits churches to save money on clergy salaries. They don't have to pay them as much since they're not taxed as much. What is most shocking, however, is that clergy can double dip. They can deduct their mortgage payments and real estate taxes from income tax, even though they paid for these with tax-exempt dollars. This amounts to a government subsidy solely for the clergy.
And, of course, you and I and all taxpayers pay more because the clergy pay less because they get this privileged benefit not available to any other class of American. The income taxation, if they were taxed the same as you and I and all the rest of Americans, that would not interfere with their religious mission, churches or organizations. So what this amounts to is not an accommodation of religion. It's really a subsidy of clergy.
It would amount to their God having to come up with a little more cash to pay for his ministry. And so, we filed suit in California with plaintiffs.
21 very wonderful members of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. We had to turn people away, actually, because we just had to file it. We had about 50 volunteers, and we want to thank them. They're all in this sort of large Sacramento area, and the case is being brought here from Madison. Our foundation litigation attorney is Rich Bolton with the Madison, Wisconsin firm. But we want to thank Michael Newdow, who lives in Sacramento, for serving as our very distinguished pro bono local counsel.
Next week, we're going to talk with a tax expert on this show about the implications of this very exciting legal challenge.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Coming up, rescheduled will be Donald C. Johansson, the discoverer of Lucy. And we'll have John Whiteside of Las Vegas to talk about why he thinks it's important for atheists to go public.
Hi, my name is John Dells from De Pere, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up in the second half of our program, the scientist and the discoverer of Lucy, Donald C. Johansson.
And now we have on the phone with us from Las Vegas a lifetime member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, John Whiteside, who, after graduating from the University of Alabama in 74, entered the Marine Corps flight training and flew F-4 Phantom and A-4 Skyhawk aircraft. Upon release from active duty, he entered the airline industry. He flew 25 years for an international airline, obtaining the rank of captain. John Whiteside has flown over 20,000 accident-free hours and transported over a million people safely to their destination. In 1990, John was recalled to active duty in the Air National Guard and flew the F-16. 52 missions with Operation Desert Storm, and was distinguished with the awarded with the Distinguished Flying Cross for heroism in combat. And he retired in 2003 with incredible generosity. He not only helped the foundation find 10 irreverent billboards to place our messages on in Las Vegas, but he underwrote the cost. And this Sunday, October 25th, he's hosting a non-prayer brunch for area members, and then they're going to repair to a billboard and get a group photo. So thank you so much, John.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate the work that you guys do to promote the separation of church and state and the evils of religion. I really do appreciate that, and I'm more than happy to donate the billboards for the cause.
You told us that when you retired, you decided you wanted to read the Bible, and you ended up reading it cover to cover 3 times. Wasn't once enough? I mean, and then after the third read, you started to question religion. Is that what happened, basically?
Yes. Well, you know, it's really hard to be deprogrammed when you've been programmed all your life to believe in a certain religion. And it took me 3 readings to actually start questioning what I was taught my entire life.
No. After the, oh, ahead, I'm sorry, you were Roman Catholic?
Yes, I was a Catholic, and I even though I really wasn't that strongly religious, I believed in something called Pascal's wager, which is basically that even though the existence of God cannot be determined through reason, a person should wager through God that God exists because he has everything to gain and nothing to lose. Well, I think that that's just a horrible, horrible theory, and I think it's wrong at this point. And of course, when I was religious, I didn't think it was wrong.
So now you feel passionately about confronting religion and promoting free thought and science and rationality. And
exactly.
Is that kind of the impetus behind why you want to put up billboards?
Yes, I believe that, first of all, the billboards really do promote science and the separation of church and state. The Beware of Dogma billboard obviously promotes the evils of religion, and so does the Imagine No Religion. Those both promote separation of church and state. And, of course, the Praise Darwin billboard promotes science. I think it's really shameful that half of Americans don't believe in the theory of evolution and believe in creationism. And we can't have that in a country that values scientific education. It's kind of like having an eight-cylinder car and only running on 4 cylinders.
Yeah, well, that's a good metaphor.
I know some people like that.
Now, one of the billboards, the one that's about Darwin says, "Praise Darwin, evolve beyond belief." And that was your favorite because we had 10 billboards and we got to choose how many of which message. And you wanted to make sure we had 4 Darwin billboards because, of course, it's the 150th anniversary of the publication of Origin of Species coming up, right?
Right.
Are they on the Strip?
Yes, they are. There's one on Las Vegas Boulevard right next to the Welcome to Las Vegas sign, which is a real famous sign.
Wow.
That a lot of people take pictures by.
Oh, so. We got to get a picture of that one.
They're in really good locations. Clear Channel really did come through. I was worried about them not supporting us and not allowing the billboards to come into existence, but they basically have been very supportive, and I'm really impressed. In fact, one of the billboards, I've got a condominium downtown. I didn't plan this, but one of the billboards is right outside the condominium where we're having the brunch Sunday.
It's an act of God.
So you can look out the window and enjoy one of the, it's Imagine a Religion, right?
Yes, and it's I really do appreciate that. In fact, I called up Steve Hershey, Clear Channel, and thanked him for that. And I asked him if I told him I had a condominium there, and he said no. So
it was just a nice coincidence.
Yes, very nice.
Now, there's been pretty good coverage. There was the Las Vegas Record News. Is that the right name?
Review Journal.
Review
right.
Journal had a nice story. There's been TV coverage. Are you getting comments? Are people noticing it that you know?
Yes. Basically, the Review Journal is a very, very conservative paper, and I was really impressed with the fairness of the article. It was a very good article, and you can access that by going to the Las Vegas Review Journal and just typing in "message to the masses."
Oh, okay. Now, you, your military service, you were telling me, I think it was a few months ago, how that impacted how you eventually became a free thinker.
Right. It's, you know, I think I'm a poster child for the Beware of Dogma. Huh. Because basically I went to war and I didn't agree with the reason for going to Desert Storm, which I felt was a war for oil. But so I questioned it, and I actually asked the chaplain, you know, how do I justify killing people? And his reply was, "Don't you think you're on the side of God?" And I answered it with a question, and I said, "No, I'm not sure. What do you think?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, you're on the side of God." But as we all know now, and as I've been kind of a free thinker, I've been reading quite a bit, and we all know German soldiers wore a belt buckle into battle that was inscribed with "God's with us."
So they were on the side of God.
Exactly. And I'm sure the Iraqi soldiers were told they were on the side of God, too. So you lose your faith, and all of a sudden becomes a very clear picture that it was wrong for what you did.
Now, John, you have an intriguing and very generous new idea that you're about to, I guess, incorporate, which is you want to start an atheist charity to feed the homeless in Las Vegas. And we're about running out of time, but can you briefly tell me what you've got in mind?
Okay, real quickly. It's Free Thought Kitchens is the name, and basically what we're going to do is we're going to provide healthy, natural, and organic food to the homeless. They already have challenged immune systems, and I'm not going to pollute people's bodies with bad food or their minds with dogma. So the second goal is to support sustainable agriculture, which is better for the environment and supports the humane treatment of farm animals. So I think this is the first kitchen in probably the United States that's dedicated to those two principles.
And then I think once you get going, your expectation will be to request money under the faith-based initiative?
Yes, we will be doing that. I'm going to privately fund it until we achieve 4-star charity rating by Charity Navigator. And I hope
Which
you can help me out
has.
With that. Exactly. And I'm looking for any guidance that you can give me on how to obtain that. But all my funding until we get that rating, and then, of course, we'll ask for private donations, and we'll also apply for faith-based funding, which is supposedly secular, but we'll be testing that.
Well, yeah, I think this would be the first test case by an atheist charity. So the hands that help are better far than lips that pray, as Robert Ingersoll said.
Well, we'll talk more about that when you get it off the ground then.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, and so if people want to find out where these billboards are, they can go to the FFRF website, look under the news releases, and we have all of them listed. Well, thank you so very much, John.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was an honor to meet both of you. I appreciate it.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Coming up, Donald C. Johansson. He was scheduled for a previous show, but he had a medical situation which interceded, and my brother filled in for him at that point. But we're delighted that today he's coming back. We'll be speaking with him right after the break about why he doesn't believe in God and why he decided to have an exhibit about the fossil of Lucy in New York City called Lucy's Legacy. So stay tuned.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio.
And our guest today is Donald C. Johansson. Most of our listeners will know Donald C. Johansson as the well-known scientist. He's dedicated 25 years of his life to exploring, discovering, and studying some of the most significant fossil finds ever made in the search for human origins. His research has taken him to Tanzania, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Jordan. Donald C. Johansson's most acclaimed find occurred in 1974 at Hadar with the discovery of a 1.8-million-year-old partial skeleton of Homo habilis and with Lucy, the 3.5-million-year-old nearly complete fossil of a female Australopithecus afarensis. Johansson is a recipient of several international prizes and awards, including 2 honorary doctorates. His books include Lucy, The Beginning of Humankind, Blueprints, Solving the Mystery of Evolution, Journey from the Dawn, Lucy's Child, The Discovery of a Human Ancestor, and his new book is Lucy's Legacy, which I have read, and I was privileged this year to catch the exhibit on Lucy called Lucy's Legacy in New York City. And that is due to Dr. Johansson's efforts to take Lucy on the road to the masses. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Donald Johansson.
Well, thank you for having me on your program.
Well, it's a real pleasure to talk with you. The week that Lucy's Legacy opened in New York City, I think the second or third day, I got to go see it. And I have
how did you feel?
I have to tell you, there was about 20 seconds when I was all by myself in that room. And it was, I'm not a religious person, but it was almost a religious experience. That's not a replica in there.
No, that is the original Lucy skeleton, 3.2 million years old. that the Ethiopian government is traveling. They decided about 6-7 years ago that they wanted to send abroad their best ambassador, and they selected Lucy for that role.
Now, I was thinking that if you're standing next to that, you can point to the first little bone that you discovered on the ground there up in Ethiopia, right?
Oh, indeed I can. I've visited the exhibit a number of times, and that little bone is a tiny fragment about 2 inches long from the right elbow. And it was the 24th of November, way back, and this is our 35th anniversary, in fact, this year. So on the 24th of November this year, she will be, right around that time, featured on CBS Sunday Morning. I've just returned from Ethiopia, where we did some filming for CBS Sunday Morning and also for Katie Couric's CBS Evening News. I'm not sure when they're going to air. It'll be probably sometime in mid-November. But I was walking back to my car. I saw over my right shoulder a tiny sort of light gray fragment of bone, and I recognized it as coming from one of the elbow bones, the one that allows you to flex and extend at the elbow. And when I kneeled down and picked it up, I could see from the anatomy that this was not a monkey, this was not an antelope, it had to have come from a human ancestor. And much to my surprise, as I looked up the slope, I saw dozens and dozens of bone fragments, which ultimately rewarded us with about 40% of a single female skeleton 3.2 million years old.
I've seen some of the photographs in your book, and I don't know how in the world that landscape, that ground just looks like a bunch of kind of rocky, rubble, sandy, dirty. How can someone like you just glance down and see, look at, there's an elbow bone from a hominid?
That's a great question, because it really is, some people, and I even said this in my first book, a little bit reluctantly talked about luck. But what it really is it's preparation. It is carrying a search image in your mind of looking for bones, having studied the human skeleton inside and out while I was a graduate student, and sitting every day in camp and looking at various casts of fossils we found in previous years. And when you're looking for something, that's what you find. When you've lost your house keys and you're running madly around the house looking for them, and your spouse or mate says, oh, did you see my address book? Well, you didn't see the address book because you were looking only for the keys.
Huh.
And there's a great lesson in that, because a geologist was working in that area the year before. His footsteps were probably less than 5-6 feet from the skeleton. He was looking for rocks. I was looking for bones. He missed her. I saw her.
But you did see some rocks.
Oh, I saw lots of rocks. But your mind filters those out. They don't excite me. And I'm looking for teeth and jaws and bones that remind me of the human skeleton.
Now, I have to say, I think I speak for many people who are very fond of Lucy, and I'm not sure if I feel that same fondness yet for Artie. What about you?
Oh, this is an interesting question, because I'm going to be updating my book, Lucy's Legacy, a paperback's coming out next April, and I'm going to do a chapter on it. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to call it. Maybe it's Lucy Meets Artie. Although Lucy wasn't in Addis Ababa when Artie made her debut a few weeks ago. An enigmatic skeleton of great antiquity, at least 1.2 million years older than Lucy. But a very interesting set of anatomy that to some scientists who have spoken to me think that this is really an ape rather than a human ancestor. It had a large, divergent, great toe that would have been well-adapted and specifically adapted for climbing in the trees. We don't know where it fits on the tree. Is it a side branch? I mean, there are several different opportunities or explanations. Was it on a side branch that went nowhere? Was it an ancestor, as one of my colleagues said to me recently, an ancestor to modern-day chimpanzees? That in itself would be very exciting.
Was Lucy one of our ancestors?
Oh, yes. Lucy sits at a fascinating place on the family tree. She sits at the juncture between very old, very primitive things, very ape-like creatures like Artie, like something called Auroran, something called Sahelanthropus. And so she sits on a pivotal point between those older, more ape-like things and a whole fluorescence on the family tree of different species of humans. human ancestors, one branch which led to those of us talking on the phone right now and all of our listeners.
So if we only had her DNA, we might say she was our great-great-great-plus grandmother, huh?
Well, we would, and it would be just wonderful if we did, but of course the bones have fossilized, turned to stone. There's no organic material left in them, but if we had the DNA, that would be exceptional.
So you overcame some objections in taking Lucy on the road because some people thought it was just too precious of a specimen.
Well, in fact, I had really nothing to do with her traveling. This was a decision made by the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Meles Zenawi, and he instructed the Ministry of Culture and the National Museum, where she lives in Addis Ababa, that she was to travel. I thought 5-6 years was much too long to have her out of the scientific arena. Others objected that this is an irreplaceable, one-of-a-kind specimen, but she has traveled very safely, and she, like tens of millions of other people every year, get on airplanes every day.
Oh, we just spoke with a pilot before you who has a very good safety record. So
that's right. And each one of us on this planet is a unique and special and one of a kind, aren't we?
That's very true. Well, I'm Annie Laurie Giller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We are talking with Donald C. Johanson about Lucy. We're going to ask him some questions about his own feelings about religion, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, my name is John Klug from Rensselaer, Indiana, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio on Air America.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're back with the scientist and atheist, Donald C. Johanson, discoverer of Lucy, and we have a lot to talk about. But first, Dr. Johanson, what are your views on religion?
Well, religion is sort of a way of making up a myth to explain why we're here. My particular views on creationism, as you know, I'm an atheist and am very comfortable with that. I've never felt the need to depend on some creator being for this happening. Of course, none of us have an answer for the very beginning, how it all began, but certainly I'm comfortable with the notion that we're here once, this is our life, and we need to make the best of it, not only for ourselves, but for all of our fellow travelers. And I think that it's incumbent on us, not because we're going to go to heaven if we're good, but it's incumbent on us to respect every living thing on this planet, and particularly the members of our own species, Homo sapiens.
You say in your book that you were a lifelong atheist. So you were raised with no religion at all then, huh?
That's right. My dad died, unfortunately. He passed away when I was 2 years old. I didn't know him. But my mother, who was a Swedish immigrant and a housekeeper, not terribly educated, but very comfortable. She immigrated to the United States when she was about 18, so that was 1920. And she always said to me that this is the only life we have. And in fact, on her deathbed, she said to me the night she passed away, she said, she used to call me Donnie. So she said, Donnie, this is it. I'm going to be passing away tonight. But I'm not going to be waiting for you anywhere. We've had a great life together. This is the only time we're here. And she said goodbye, and she passed away that evening.
Your life puts the lie to the claim that without a God, you can have no meaning or purpose for your existence. Because look at the kind of life you've been living.
Exactly. I think, in fact, not depending on a creator to look over you and to reward you and so on, is more of a challenge in life, rather than saying, well, you know, that was God's will or Allah's will or whatever. You have an excuse. You have a way of saying Hail Marys or Our Fathers or Atonement or whatever for excusing behavior which is clearly immoral behavior by anybody's standard. And I think being an atheist, we are all aware of everything we do. Every day is in the moment. I am, if anything, philosophically speaking, I'm a Buddhist. So I realize that this moment is the moment. This moment we're on the phone. And it is a moment that we should appreciate, enjoy, relish, and try to be kind to whoever or whatever is around us, whether it's a family dog, or the scorpion that gets in my house that I take outside and let go, or one another. So I think that, in fact, knowing that this is the only time we have is, in fact, a way of increasing the value of life here.
Makes it more precious, knowing how brief and fragile it is.
Exactly.
Now, who could say that better? Why do we need a Bible? Very
right.
Well said.
Yeah.
Now, given the widespread ignorance in our country, you know, half the population rejecting evolution, could you tell us, you know, the listener who might not understand, what is the significance of Lucy?
Well, the real significance of Lucy is that she is not only a link to our past, but more importantly, a link to the natural world. When people who are very religious disregard the natural world around them, I think that's probably, in quotation marks, the biggest sin that we could ever commit. We have the Creator. We know the Creator. The Creator is the natural world. That is what created us. That is what created our ancestors. That's what has created all life on this planet. We're all connected by DNA. Every living organism has the same building blocks. The process of evolution by means of natural selection is the creator of all diversity on this planet. Lucy reconnects us with the natural world. With
maybe
every new discovery, whether it's Ardi, whether it's any other fossil, it reconnects us to our roots. And our roots are based in the natural world, and it is really incumbent on all of us to protect that natural world, to look after that natural world, not to disregard it and destroy it, cut it down, pollute it, and so on. We wouldn't want to do that if we were a religious person to our Creator. Yet the very Creator who created us is the natural world, and we are miserably unkind to her.
Maybe that's what I was feeling when I was standing beside the Lucy fossil there at that exhibit, that I was looking at my quote-unquote Creator. I mean, this natural world that we're a part of, we are animals too.
That's right. We tend to forget that. I remember the very first anthropology course I took as an undergraduate, way back in the Pleistocene. That course, the book talked about humans being super organic. Alfred Kroeber, a man of German origins and noted anthropologist, thought that culture made us above and beyond the natural world. Look what's happening in the world today, whether it's disease, whether it's natural disaster, whether it's contamination, E. coli or whatever.
Or war.
But we are not above the natural world. Mother Nature will always have the last word.
The exhibit is ending this month. Where's it going after this?
I don't know. The museum that is traveling Lucy's legacy is the Houston Museum of Natural Science, and I'm sure they will be making an announcement, or listeners who want to call them and find out where she's traveling. It's a secret to me, too.
Do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's called becominghuman.org. Which is a human evolution, a site on human evolution, human origins. Readers can post questions and look at many documentaries. It's undergoing a major overhaul in the next year or so, and I urge listeners to look in and use that website.
Becominghuman.org?
Yes.
Nice name.
I saw you at the Humanist Convention in Tempe last summer, and you mentioned the IHO, is that what it is, Institute for Human Origins? That's still in Tempe.
Yeah, the Institute of Human Origins is here in Tempe. I've stepped down as director. I'm founding director now. But we're doing active research. There's a team in the field right now in Ethiopia. I just came back last week. I was with them for a few days. They've made some interesting new discoveries, which we'll be hearing more about later. And we also have a team working at the very tip of southern Africa, near a place called Mossel Bay. And even though anthropologists argue all the time about, you know, whose bones are the most important and who's the ancestor, the one thing that we've learned and the one thing that Lucy's taught us beyond anything else and beyond any dispute, I think, within the field of human origins, is that we all came out of Africa, we all have African origins, and that everybody on the planet today is indeed an African.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Yes, thank you.
I have a T-shirt that says, "We are all Africans." And
wonderful.
And that's a compliment.
It is a compliment, absolutely. And we all need to think and do more for that continent.
Donald C. Johansson, the discoverer of Lucy, his newest book is Lucy's Legacy. We thank you, and we also want to thank our earliest guest, John Whiteside, and also our engineer today, the other Dan on this program, Dan Ginsberg. We didn't pray for him last week, but he's back in the studio following up some surgery. So welcome back, Dan.
How are you doing?
Pretty well. I don't think I prayed for myself either, but I did hope that it would go well, my hopes came true.
The non-prayers worked.
I guess so.
You're on crutches and undergoing therapy, but here you are.
Yep, not for long, though.
Welcome
I'll be walking
back
again soon. Thank you.
This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. You can go to ffrf.org/radio to podcast or archive.
And look us up at ffrf.org or call 1-800-335-4021 for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Look up our latest lawsuit, FFRF versus Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury. And you can stay plugged in. You can tune in next week for more about our parish exemption lawsuit, more blasphemy, and more rational radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.